Baseball is back. The 2025 MLB season is upon us. So what's the easiest way to keep up with all the big stars, top scores, and fun storylines from the night before? What's the solution? Is there a secret?
Chocolate milk and squats. That's the secret.
Not quite, Pete, but there is the Morning Lineup Podcast, a quick, less than 10-minute morning highlight show from MLB. It airs Mondays through Fridays on Spotify, Apple, or wherever you get your podcasts. You bring the chocolate milk, we'll bring the baseball news.
Into the box, shot,
score! It's time for Atlanta Soccer Tonight.
Tune in as Jason Longshore gives you insight and analysis on the beautiful game, including headlines from around the world of soccer.
Rebound, score!
This is Atlanta Soccer Tonight, brought to you by your local Ford dealer and Firehouse Subs. Enjoy more subs, save more lives.
Atlanta Soccer Tonight is on Sports Radio 92.9, The Game. Here's Jason Longshore.
Let's kick it. Atlanta Soccer Tonight is live on 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app. Jason Longshore, this is your weekly soccer show. It covers things in Atlanta, Georgia, the Southeast, the United States, the entire planet. That's what we do on Atlanta Soccer Tonight. And we're going to cross a lot of different oceans and rivers and lakes and streams, probably all kinds of different things tonight on the show. It's one of those where, you know, I've got an idea of what I want to talk about in the first segment. We will talk Atlanta United and we'll get into what you can take out of a loss to league leading Philadelphia on the weekend, what you can carry forward into a match against co-league leading FC Cincinnati on Sunday and Sunday night soccer. But I do want to talk about what I just watched from Argentina. The playoffs. First off, you know, a lot of people will tell you that playoffs are very bad in this sport because some leagues in other countries don't use them. Most don't. Some do. Mexico does. Liga MX has a playoff system that has expanded over the years. Argentina, the defending World Cup champions, by the way, they kind of know what they're doing a little bit. They do constantly change their league format on a regular basis. We gripe about the playoff format in Major League Soccer changing every few years. Argentina, the entire league structure changes every year, it seems like. There are 30 teams in the top flight in Argentina, same as Major League Soccer. And they adopted a playoff format this year. And I mean, I'm not going to go through the entire history of things. They haven't done playoffs in their league format in a while, at least. But they've went to an Apertura Clausura model. And remember, they are in the Southern Hemisphere, so they are headed into winter right now. But they operate on the calendar year like Major League Soccer does. And in their Apertura that is concluding now, 30 teams, 16 teams went to the postseason. What they do is similar to Mexico in that they play every team in their groups. They split the league into two. It's two 15-team groups. You split it, you play every team once, you play them, if you played them at home in the Apertura, you'll play them away in the Clausura, for example, and then there is one crossover round for the rivalries, the Clásicos. They always separate Boca and River, for example, Boca Juniors and River Plate. Those are separated, they're in separate groups. The two teams from Rosario, Newell's Old Boys and Rosario Central, they are separated. So you have one round that is the Clásico round. It's always a big weekend in Argentina. So this is the first time in a long time they've had a true playoff format in the Apertura and in the Clausura to determine the league champion. And it's been total chaos. You got to the quarterfinals, the two teams that won their groups, they were both knocked out. River Plate played tonight. Boca Juniors was knocked out last night. Boca's had a mess of a calendar year. We'll talk about that a little bit in the next segment. But River Plate tonight hosting Platense. Platense is a small club that has never won a top flight title in Argentina. Platense is also known as Los Calamares, the squids. Yeah, that's, I'm not kidding. Like, that's what they're known as. They're known as the squids. One of the greatest nicknames for a team, period, you will find. They were named that after a journalist wrote that the team moved like a squid in its ink. So it stuck. found their mascot tonight, and it's glorious. And I would love to see some team adopt the squid mascot in the United States, but I digress. This game was what you love about the league in Argentina, which is chaos on a regular basis. Platense scored in the first half. They held on and defended. The referee was interesting, to say the least. The journalists out of Argentina are shredding the referee on every social media service known to man. River got a dubious penalty in the 98th minute of the match. There were 6 minutes of stoppage time that were shown on the board. Yeah, 98, that would be two plus. Then they added three somehow in stoppage time. The penalty was meh. There was a huge challenge right before that. Should have been a foul on River. It wasn't called. River goes down. They earn the penalty. They convert. After a gigantic argument, it took like 5 minutes for the penalty to be taken. So no extra time. They go straight to penalties pretty much right after this. River takes the lead in the shootout, but then one off the post, a save, Platense. They get their nerve back, and they convert, and they win at El Monumental. Platense beating River Plate. So in Argentina now, in the playoffs, the top two, the group winners, the top two seeds, both out, Rosario Central, they were knocked out. Argentinos Juniors, they were knocked out. The two grandes, Boca Juniors and River Plate, they are knocked out. I'll be curious to see what the reaction is in Argentina to this. I think they're far more accepting of changes to format. Like I said, it happens every year. You're not going to see the outcry about how you have to change it to protect the big teams or the top seeds. Like sometimes we get here and sometimes you have happened in other countries. This is seen as generally a good thing. And there will be debate about it because that's how football is talked about in Argentina. But just a wonderful night of drama in Argentina. And it shows you that a team like Platense, they can make a late run here and get into the postseason and then make a run in the postseason to go to the semifinals and try to win their first ever league title. I know who I'm rooting for the rest of the way in Argentina. Independiente will host Huracan. Platense will have to go on the road again. They will go to San Lorenzo next weekend. But we got to talk about Atlanta United, and we got to talk about what happened against the Philadelphia Union on the weekend. Not a great performance, let's be fair, but not a bad performance either. Philadelphia is the top team in the league for a reason, and I think they showed it. I think they showed it in their quality in this match. I thought, and it's something I said at halftime, and it's been echoed by others as well, Atlanta United looked like Atlanta United in the first half. And that's a step in the right direction, because the journey of this season, and I know we're all going through it in real time, so it's very easy to lose perspective, and it's very easy to kind of get off track and remember things differently, and things get exaggerated in real time. I think when we look back at this season, when all is said and done, it's been a fascinating one, because early on, I felt like this team played better than it got results. And it played in a way in large portions, not majority of portions, but it's not atypical, to be honest, especially with the new manager and Ronnie Dyla. I thought they played very well for large portions of matches, should have gotten better results, and played in a manner that felt like Atlanta United. You know, a little more vertical, maybe a little more of a focal point on counter pressure, little things like that. But it felt like it fit into what you expect from Atlanta United. And, you know, I started the conversation about Argentina, and identity, when we talk about clubs around the world, is important. And I think Atlanta United, in this match against Philadelphia, maybe regained some of that on-field identity in terms of having possession, in terms of creating chances, combination play to get into the attacking third. You saw good things in the first half. Now, it didn't last, And full credit to Philadelphia, by the way. I will give, and if you have ever listened to me talk about Major League Soccer and talk about Atlanta United, you know this isn't exactly easy for me to do, because Philadelphia is a team that I have enjoyed not being a fan of as of late. I do think they look different under Bradley Carnell. I think they've got a little bit different identity. There is still some of the Jim Curtin-esque cynical play. And I'm not even getting into the idea of possession and pressing and how much of the ball you want. Do you not want the ball at all? I'm not even getting into that. I'm talking about some of the cynical play that really drove me crazy about Philadelphia, to the point that the league made a rule change about referees making players get up and not waste time. Philadelphia was a big part of that. Agree, disagree, I don't care. We saw it way too many times in matches, and it wasn't just against Atlanta United that you saw egregious time wasting. And you saw it in this match with Kai Wagner. He still got some of that in him. Very happy that he was okay, because that was a nasty collision with him and Latte Lott. And I can tell you now, because I've had it confirmed by our SDH Network photographer, Sophia Cupertino, that glue was used to seal the wound on his head. There was a lot of blood. He had to come off the match. He had to change jerseys. Luckily, it seems like that's all it was. I have not heard of any subsequent after effects from the collision for either Latte Lott or for Kai Wagner. It was scary at the time. It sounded very scary down on the field. He's okay. There were multiple times before that there was egregious play acting and time wasting from Kai Wagner with anything resembling an injury. And that stuff's frustrating. And it's very frustrating when then you actually do have a real injury and you wonder at first, well, is it? And it was. And that was confirmed from others. But Philadelphia on the field, I like what Bradley Carnell is doing with them. I think they are still, again, true to their identity. This is a team that will build without the ball. It is about how they defend and where they defend and where they want the game to be played. Field position is very important for Philadelphia. But I think there's elements of better soccer in there. And it is appreciated. I think Bradley Carnell has a different viewpoint on this style of play. I do think it is a little more appealing. Not by much. I still prefer a team that wants the ball. I still want possession. I still want that control. But I'll give Bradley Carnell and I'll give Philadelphia their credit. Nobody expected Philadelphia to be where they are this season. Nobody expected Atlanta United to be where they are either. And they've got to find a way to deal with where they are. It's not going to be easy. You host Cincinnati on Sunday. Then you host Orlando in the midweek. Then you go to Red Bulls. And when you need to start stacking some momentum, you have a very difficult week ahead. Something's got to give for this team. I do like the shape that we saw against Philadelphia. It was a little bit different. I'm going to talk about that after the break, and then we're going to get caught up on everything going on around the world when we talk Club World Cup, which is less than a month away. There's all kinds of maneuvering happening from clubs on pretty much every continent. We'll get into that right after this break. You're listening to Atlanta Soccer Tonight on 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app.
Baseball is back. The 2025 MLB season is upon us. So what's the easiest way to keep up with all the big stars, top scores, and fun storylines from the night before? What's the solution? Is there a secret?
Chocolate milk and squats. That's the secret.
Not quite, Pete, but there is the Morning Lineup podcast. A quick, less than 10-minute morning highlight show from MLB. It airs Mondays through Fridays on Spotify, Apple, or wherever you get your podcasts. You bring the chocolate milk, we'll bring the baseball news.
Back to more of Atlanta Soccer Tonight with Jason Longshore.
On Sports Radio 92.9, The Game.
Welcome back. It is Atlanta Soccer Tonight, live on 92.9, The Game and the Odyssey app. I'm Jason Longshore. Thanks for hanging out with me this evening. We're going to get into Club World Cup next and what's going on with the teams around it and a couple storylines to keep in mind. But I do want to finish up the Atlanta United conversation from the last segment about the shape. It was a very subtle tweak that Ronnie Dyla employed in this one, and I thought it helped unlock a couple different things in the team. He's went to three center backs as of late, and I agree with the move. I think the team has been a little frail defensively. The third center back gives you just a little bit more comfort there without sacrificing getting forward. So I like that, and I think you have the players to suit it. You have the wingbacks to suit it with Brooks Lennon, although he was injured again in the first half of the match against Philadelphia. You have Pedro Amador. You do have the ability to play Saba Lobjanidze as a wingback. You have Ronald Hernandez. You have Matt Edwards as possibilities there too. But you can play an attacking player as a wingback if they can do enough defensively for you. And if you have a center back like Matt Edwards, who has proven to be a natural fit for this kind of shape, he can slide over and make it a line of four if Saba does get caught up the field, for example, or Edwin Mosquera or Luke Brennan. There's other options to play that wingback role as well. So that part works. We'd seen that. But the tweak was in the midfield. It was one holding midfielder behind two rather than two holding midfielders behind one. And I'm really reluctant to use the 6-8-10 terminology because I'm hearing it completely misused everywhere. In traditional terms, the six is the most defensive midfielder. The eight is a mixed midfielder, a box-to-box, you could call. That term gets thrown around too. Somebody who has to get forward and defend, but isn't necessarily the deepest on a regular basis or the most attacking on a regular basis. A 10, playmaker. Sometimes they can play it more as a goal-scoring threat, but that is the most advanced of the midfielders. So six most defensive, eight in the middle, 10 as the most attack-minded. And you can have a three-man midfield with two sixes and a 10. You can have it with two sixes and an eight. That means it's going to be a little bit deeper, probably. You can have it with a 6-8 and a 10, where one guy is going to sometimes flip it to make it two behind one or two in front of one. You can do a lot of different things. In this shape, Ronny Dyla has typically had two behind one. He had one behind two. It was Tristan Mbeumo behind Jay Fortune and Alexei Miranchuk. And I thought it really functioned like a 6-2-8, if you want to call it that. But Fortune and Miranchuk both were capable to drop deep and really flank Tristan Mbeumo. And they could also get higher up the field when they needed. They could flare out wide when they needed. It's a very fluid midfield. And I think those three worked very well together. And I thought they complemented one another really well. What it also did is it allowed Miguel Almiron to be in an extremely free role. And that's been a challenge for Ronny Dyla, is to find the best version of Miguel Almiron in this team. And it kind of reminds me of how he looked. The rest of the shape's a little different, but how he looked in the playoff run in 2018, where it was a 5-3-1-1. Not all that different, but a little different. And he was very free, not really pairing directly with Joseph Martinez then, and he wasn't pairing directly with Jamal Tiare or Latte Lott here, but he's basically a wild card. And you're not asking him to follow a structure, especially defensively, which has proven to be an issue this season. I know we've talked about chance creation out of him, which was good on Saturday, where it had not been good previously. But defensively, when he's in a wide position in a 4-3-3, or even when he's a central midfielder, you've got to get a little bit more defensively. We saw the shape in Austin. I mentioned it a lot during the call. He needed to be wider, and he wasn't, so that was creating 2v1 situations that Atlanta was able to handle, but a lot of stress. In this, which kind of honestly looked like a line of five and a diamond in front of that, it was Mbeumo as the deepest of the diamond. It was Fortune and Miranchuk in front of him, and it was the striker Jamal Tiare to start. And then Almiron would pop up anywhere and make it a pentagon shaped in a bunch of different directions. Sometimes he dropped deep and he was next to Mbeumo in the buildup. Sometimes he was very high next to the forward. Sometimes he was more in that middle group. I think it suits him right now. And I think it suits him as he's trying to regain his confidence playing regularly and contributing to this team. So there were a lot of things about the shape that I really liked. That's kind of how I saw it. We'll see if it continues against Cincinnati on Sunday. Pre-game coverage will start at 6 o'clock. With Abe Gordon and Madison Cruz from Mercedes-Benz Stadium, Mike Conte and I will take over for a 7-10 kickoff from the Benz. Later this summer, the Benz is going to host the Club World Cup. That actually starts really soon. June 16th is the first game in Atlanta. Chelsea will be playing the winner of the play-in match between LAFC and Club America. That's going to be on May 31st. So when that game is done, we will know who is coming to Atlanta to face Chelsea. A lot of conversation right now worldwide about the Club World Cup. I want to play you some of that sound in this segment. First up, Chelsea legend and Bayern legend, Michael Ballack, talking about what he's kind of looking forward to this summer in the Club World Cup.
I always get the feedback when I'm traveling, you know, when I'm traveling and I'm surprised even now in which corner of the world people know me, recognize me. I mean, it's fantastic. Not everyone looks the Bundesliga, but as a for national team, you've been watching plenty of times in all over the world. And so this, the FIFA is doing that in the Club World Cup competition now, and hopefully it will have the same acceptance and an audience comparable to a World Cup for the nations.
I'm excited to see what this can be as we're getting closer and closer. I'm really liking some of these storylines that are emerging, and it's creating another window in the transfer market as well, with teams being able to add players in that June 1st to June 10th window ahead of the tournament. All kinds of maneuvering going on with that. Real Madrid is one of the teams that is doing a lot of maneuvering. We'll get to the maneuvering in a second. News came out today, and if you're wondering how serious some teams are going to take this tournament, Real Madrid is in the category of teams that I think will take it extremely seriously. They didn't win La Liga. They didn't win the Champions League. That's a disappointing year. New manager coming in Xabi Alonso, who will be in place for the tournament. There's pressure to do well in this, to the point that Jude Bellingham is going to have surgery on a shoulder issue that he's had for a while. That's going to be after the Club World Cup. So he's going to miss around 12 weeks of the start of the La Liga season, maybe about eight or so of the La Liga season. He's going to miss preseason. He's going to miss the start of the season. He'll have to get back up to speed. He's had this issue most of this season, and there really hasn't been a break to have the surgery. He's going to play in the Club World Cup and then miss the start of the La Liga season. Jude Bellingham recently spoke to FIFA about this event and what it means to his club, Real Madrid. Here's what Jude had to say.
I think a big part of it is it being the first one. So we're all interested to see what it's about and how kind of important it becomes in terms of the going forward, and this one, how many teams really put all that they can into it. We're interested to see the dynamic of the tournament. But for us, like I said, it's an opportunity to win another title. It's an opportunity to be the first ones to win it. And that's not something we take lightly. So it's a bit of history, you know, and I've said before, there's not many things you can do at this club that haven't already been done. So it's a nice to have something that's a new opportunity.
They have done about everything you can do in the game, Real Madrid. But they haven't won the 32-team Club World Cup because nobody has. So very cool to hear that. And I think Real Madrid is a team to watch in this tournament in a big, big way. They are looking to add talent ahead of the tournament. Trent Alexander-Arnold is one that they're willing, it sounds like, to pay around an extra $1 million to Liverpool to sign him technically a couple weeks before his contract is over. That one should be done. Dean Huijsen coming in from Bournemouth, that's going to be between $40 and $50 million on the transfer fee or the release clause that will get paid to bring him in ahead of the tournament. There's talk about Alvaro Carrera, the left back at Benfica, who was previously at Manchester United. There's also talk about Nico Paz, who was transferred to Como in Italy, but there's a buyback in the deal for about 8 million euro. They sold him for 6. So pay a little bit extra. He had a great year at Como. They're looking at bringing him in so Xabi Alonso can work with him and make a decision on, is he going to be around long term? Are they going to keep him and move Arda Güler on? Are they going to keep both? Are they going to move Paz on after the tournament? A lot of things to figure out, but they want to bring him back in time for the tournament, and they're going to spend the money to do it. Flamengo in Brazil, they are trying to strengthen ahead of this tournament. It sounds like, according to Fabrizio Romano, they are going to add the veteran Italian national team midfielder, Jorginho, from Arsenal. Mikel Arteta pretty much confirmed it, that he's leaving before the win against Newcastle. He said, we need players because four or five players, including Jorginho and Kieran Tierney, whose contributions I'm very thankful for, have had their contracts or loans come to an end. So he's going to be out of contract. Flamengo is looking to bring him in. He's already visited Rio in the past after his wedding, warmly received in Flamengo. And it sounds like that is going to get done to strengthen that midfield. He's actually born in Brazil before going to Italy. There's also reports out of Spain that an unnamed Brazilian club, not sure which one, made a tempting offer to Cristiano Ronaldo to join them ahead of the Club World Cup. Al Nassr from Saudi Arabia, they didn't qualify. They actually didn't qualify for the Asian Champions League elite level either for the next season. Ronaldo's out of contract on June 30th, and a deal has not been done yet. Crazier things have happened, and that would add a little bit of extra spice to the tournament, wouldn't it? If Ronaldo went to a Brazilian club to play in this competition, it honestly wouldn't shock me. I don't know who's got the money that he would demand for that sort of thing, but John Texter can't pay his bills, but John Texter throws money around at times. I don't know where the money's going to come from, but Botafogo, perhaps, maybe, I don't know. We'll see. This is Atlanta Soccer Tonight. We're getting caught up on all the maneuvering around the Club World Cup and everything that is coming to the United States this summer. Let's hear from Harry Kane. He is excited about one particular match with a team that we mentioned in the first segment, Boca Juniors, who got knocked out of the quarterfinals of the Argentine Apertura playoffs last night. Here's Harry Kane talking about their match with Boca in Miami.
Yeah, that'll be a special match. I think it'll be one of the, you know, the standout matches in the whole of the group phase and in the whole tournament, to be honest. And yeah, I think it's a great experience for the players to play against, you know, different teams around the world. Of course, we're so used to playing in Europe, and yeah, it's good to kind of have those experiences against different types of teams, different atmospheres. I think that game's in Miami, which will be pretty special as well with the fan base there. So, yeah, again, another experience to look forward to. It'll be a really tough game, but one we'll enjoy.
Bayern is another team that I'm looking at as one to watch in this tournament. They did win the Bundesliga, but they didn't win the Champions League. And this is a club with huge ambitions. I think they're going to go all in on this tournament. They're trying to figure out what their back line is going to look like. Eric Dier, it doesn't look like he is going to stick around. He's already signed a pre-contract with Monaco. There was talk that he might stick around, but he broke his right hand on Saturday. And now Monaco is, you know, obviously very reluctant to have him play for a club that he is leaving before he comes to them. Doesn't look like he's going to be available for this tournament. There's some other potential injuries. Kim Min-jae is touch and go as he's coming back from an Achilles injury. We will have to wait and see on that one. But it does look like Dayo Upamecano will be available. Bayern and Boca is going to be a fascinating one. Boca need a manager right now. They are looking at Miguel Angel Russo, who is at San Lorenzo and might win a league title and then make the move over to Boca. We'll have to see. Gabriel Milito declined the opportunity to go to Boca Juniors. Fiorentina, they're looking to bring or to move on from Lucas Beltran, and he could go back to River Plate ahead of the Club World Cup. River now has nothing else to do until they get ready for the Club World Cup. It might be a loan move with an option to buy. News broke just a little while ago that Pachuca is adding a winger named Robert Kennedy. Not kidding. He's from Brazil. He has bounced around. He's been on the books of Chelsea multiple times, never got regular time there, was loaned. He started at Fluminense in Brazil. He's been at Newcastle. He's been in Spain with Granada, Getafe, Valladolid. Very tricky winger. He will be joining Pachuca for the Club World Cup. And Manchester City got a boost today. Rodri back in the team. He made his first appearance since September of 2024 against Arsenal. There's talk that Real Madrid might be keeping an eye on Rodri at the Club World Cup to see where his recovery is. One more clip from you, Ruben Diaz of Manchester City talking about the Club World Cup.
It will be a different challenge, and on that, very much like the typical national team World Cup, because you play with teams from different continents, completely different ways of seeing the game. And yes, the adaptation you'll have to make, it's obviously a big part of being successful. Yeah.
I mean, that adaptation in a tournament structure is always interesting. Don't forget, you can still get tickets for the Club World Cup, FIFA.com/tickets. And there are some new pricing options in there. You might want to check it out if you're interested in the three games here in Atlanta. Chelsea playing either Club America or LAFC on June 16th. Lionel Messi and Inter Miami against Porto of Portugal June 19th. Manchester City, Ruben Diaz, they will be facing Al Ain from Abu Dhabi on June 22nd. Three knockout games as well, June 29, July 1, and July 5th. You can also look at hospitality packages at fifa.com/hospitality. Coming up next to round out the show, the 3-4-3, three local stories, four headlines, and three things that make me smile about this game that I love so much. Coming up next on 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app.
Baseball is back. The 2025 MLB season is upon us. So what's the easiest way to keep up with all the big stars, top scores, and fun storylines from the night before? What's the solution? Is there a secret?
Chocolate milk and squats. That's the secret.
Not quite, Pete, but there is the Morning Lineup podcast, a quick, less than 10-minute morning highlight show from MLB. It airs Mondays through Fridays on Spotify, Apple, or wherever you get your podcasts. You bring the chocolate milk, we'll bring the baseball news.
It's time to wrap up tonight's show with the 3-4-3.
3-4-3.
Three local stories, four headlines from around the world, and three things that made you smile about the game.
Atlanta Soccer Tonight is on Sports Radio 92.9, The Game.
Welcome back. It is Atlanta Soccer Tonight, live on 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app. It's time for the 3-4-3, brought to you by Ford. Visit your local Ford dealer. We're going to go around the world in 15 minutes or so, maybe a little bit less by now. Let's start with the local side. Girls state champions won in high school last week. I always love getting a chance to call these games, and I had a chance to be on the call for the only team in the state to finish undefeated. It was the Roswell girls team. They won the 5A state championship 1-0 over Northgate to finish undefeated. A few more had a chance to do that. They fell in the state championship match. One of those was Buford. They lost to Walton in penalties. So Walton won the 6A state title. Blessed Trinity won the 4A state championship over Marist. Lovett won the private school bracket for single A through 3A schools, beating Greater Atlanta Christian in the final. Pike County won the wildest championship game of last week, 6-5 over Savannah Arts to claim the 2A title. I wouldn't have been able to handle being on that game. Our friend Mateen Rad was on the call down in Macon for that one. Oconee County won their third title in a row. They took the 3A title over Jefferson 1-0 in overtime. Model won the single A D1 title, beating Bremen, while Atlanta Classical took the single A D2 title 2-1 over Lake Oconee Academy. Number two on the local side, the boys state championships last week. River Ridge, they won their second straight title in 6A. They finished as the number one team in all classifications in the state via the coaches poll. It was 5A, sorry, that they narrowly defeated Sprayberry in a classic final. It was a great match to call up in Duluth. Westminster, they also won their second straight title. They knocked off previously unbeaten Marist in the 4A championship match. In 6A, it was Campbell. They made it back to the state title game. They lost last year. They finally got their trophy. They defeated Grayson 1-0. Johnson of Gainesville, they lost in the state title game last year. They got back and they won 3A 1-0 over Northwest Whitfield. Atlanta International, they won the single A through 3A private school bracket. They beat Whitfield Academy 1-0. Drew Charter won the 2A state title with a 5-1 win over Shaw. Armucci won the single A D1 title 4-3 over Thomasville, while Lake Oconee Academy took the single A D2 title 3-1 over Atkinson County. Number three on the local side, Atlanta United 2. They are unbeaten in their last four matches, drawing 2-2 last night at Crown Legacy. Match was originally scheduled for Sunday night in Kennesaw, moved to last night up on the road just outside of Charlotte. Kamen Togashi opened the scoring. Javier Armas, he converted on a rebound from his own saved penalty to tie the match late. Crown Legacy did win the post-match shootout for a bonus point. Twos are back in action on Friday night in Kennesaw, hosting Orlando at 7:30 p.m. Let's get into headlines from around the world. Four of them. Number one, we're going to Italy. The Serie A title might be decided on Friday. It's kind of an interesting situation in Italy. We talk about different formats throughout the world, right? Very few leagues have the exact same format top to bottom. Italy's a little different. Napoli have a one-point advantage over Inter going into the final round of matches in Italy. Both teams drew on Sunday. It was very dramatic back and forth. The matches for those two teams will be played on Friday. Inter will travel to 10th-placed Como, while Napoli will host 14th-placed Cagliari. If Napoli loses and Inter draws, the two clubs would be equal on points. That would trigger a one-match playoff for the title. And it would have to take place before Inter's Champions League final against PSG on May 31st. That's why they moved those games up to Friday. So if they have to play on Tuesday, for example, they can get that one in. Champions League spot is also up for grabs this weekend in Serie A. Atalanta have the third spot locked down. Napoli and Inter will obviously qualify. But Juventus, Roma, Lazio, all could finish fourth, depending on how the results end up. Juventus has 67 points, Roma 66, Lazio 65. It's decision day in the Premier League on Sunday. Answer number two on the headlines. Liverpool, they've got the title won. Arsenal, they've got second place clinched. The three teams being relegated, that's been decided. The Premier League is going to have five teams in the Champions League after getting a bonus allocation due to the league's performance in European competitions this year. All of the top seven right now are guaranteed European football in some form or fashion. But that's three spots up for grabs, five battling it out. Manchester City, Newcastle United, and Chelsea are holding the spots right now, while Aston Villa and Nottingham Forest are going to try to fight their way into third, fourth, or fifth place. Superior goal difference over Villa means Man City only need a point. Newcastle and Chelsea, if they win, they clinch it. But there's one really, really big last day fixture. Chelsea go to Nottingham Forest. Nottingham Forest have to win to have any chance to get into the Champions League. They were in the spot just a couple of weeks ago. Newcastle are at home to Everton. Aston Villa go to Manchester United. Manchester City are at Fulham. And if you want to come watch all of the games in one place, you can come join me for an official Premier League watch party. Yes, official. On Sunday at the Battery. It's going to be outside of Truist Park. Party starts at 10 a.m. All the games kick off at 11 a.m. And 2 hours later, maybe with a little bit of change, depending on how much stoppage time they give, we will know who's in the Champions League, who's in the Europa League, who's in the Conference League, all of the chaos. I'm really looking forward to that Chelsea-Nottingham Forest match, but I'll be there talking about all of it with y'all. Number three on the headlines, we're going to come back to the U.S. The Lamar Hunt U.S. Open Cup round of 16 started tonight. There's 15 MLS teams in it, one USL championship team that has made it this far, the Pittsburgh Riverhounds. They will travel across Pennsylvania to face the Philadelphia Union tomorrow night. Chicago Fire, they made easy work of New England tonight. 3-1 win. New England got a consolation goal late. Just kicking off and just underway, actually. San Jose is hosting Portland tonight. No score in that one in the 13th minute of action. Five other matches tomorrow night, but the headliner is Pittsburgh at Philadelphia. Number four in the headlines. Let's bounce back over to Europe. One of the most lucrative games in the world, the Europa League final tomorrow between Manchester United and Tottenham Hotspur. And the reason why it's so lucrative this time is neither team is going to the Champions League next year or going to European competition at all, for that matter, unless they win this match. The winner gets into the Champions League, the loser out of everything. Manchester United, 16th out of 20 in the Premier League. Tottenham Hotspur, 17th. The two teams just outside of the relegation spots. They're playing for a European final. It feels like a relegation game, not a European final. It's such a weird feeling. Kieran Maguire is a financial football expert, and he said this weekend, this game for Manchester United is financially the most important match in the club's history. If they get into the Champions League, and this goes for Spurs as well, it could generate over 100 million pounds from tickets, broadcast money, sponsor bonuses, could be an additional 30 or 40 million pounds if they go deep into the competition next year. The reason why this is so big for Manchester United, last year, Tottenham Hotspur lost 26 million pounds. A lot more than I could lose, but they're generally a very sustainable, well-run financial club. Manchester United last year lost 113 million pounds. That's crazy. Over the past 3 years, they've lost over 300 million pounds. That's absolutely insane. Here's why it's so insane. Last year, Manchester United generated total revenue 651 million pounds, the fourth highest of any club in the world. Generated 651 million. They still lost 113 million. That's crazy talk. I mean, what are you doing? One reason why, the leveraged takeover that the Glazers did in 2005 to buy Manchester United. They're more than 1 billion pounds in debt. It costs tens of millions of pounds per year to service that debt. That's only going to keep going up because they've refinanced it. They've got higher interest rates. It's a mess. They might fail to comply with Premier League profit and sustainability rules. You think those supposedly limit clubs' losses? Well, over 300 million in 3 years. You do the math. In March, just to give you the reminder here, if you might have missed this, Manchester United had to take significant action. Things like cutting club ambassadors like Sir Alex Ferguson, cutting them off the payroll, cutting a lot of staff, dropping lunches for the staff, only offering them soup and sandwiches. Craziness. And Jim Ratcliffe, the co-owner who has bought a minority share of the club but is allowed to run it, because Glazers, whatever. Ratcliffe said if they hadn't taken that significant action, the club would have gone bust at the end of the calendar year last year. So, all of that being said, if Manchester United don't win the Europa League, I don't know if Manchester United looks like Manchester United anymore. Like, it's to that kind of degree. If they win it, they can reload some talent, and they still need to save some money, but they probably won't. But they can at least be a big club still. If they don't win this, I don't know when they're going to be a big club again. It's really scary for Manchester United. This game means a ton. We'll see if they can get it done against Tottenham Hotspur. That's tomorrow afternoon, 3 o'clock. You can watch on Paramount Plus. Three things that make me smile as we finish this edition of AST Out. Number one, Platense. I mean, come on. Vamos. Vamos. Just what a performance from Platense. Calamares forever. They get the win. They beat River. They have a chance. And there's not a whole lot of teams that are in these kind of spots. They have a chance to win their first ever top flight title in Argentina. They have in their history three trophies, one in the second division outright 1976, two in one portion of the second division in 2006 and 2018. Never a top flight title, and they have a chance for that. They're into the semifinals. Number two on things that make me smile, the local WPSL season getting started this weekend. Decatur FC will host a preseason match. They will go on the road for a league match on Sunday. You've got Atlanta Fire United in the league. You've got United Football Academy in the league. You've also got Georgia Impact in the league. They have an intra-squad scrimmage at Cherokee High School on Thursday night. Great level of play. Lots of local talent. And as we've talked about with the WPSL, they are forming a pro division for next year, and the Georgia Impact are going to be part of that. While Decatur FC, probably a team that's looking at it, they're going to draw probably on average 2,000 to 3,000 fans to Decatur High School all season long. If you're looking for things to do on Thursday and Friday nights, go to Georgia Impact in Woodstock on Thursday. Go to Decatur FC on Friday. Number three, I had a blast last night. I called the championship games of the Atlanta United Regional Development School event at Mercedes-Benz Stadium. Kids of all ages, it's a great program, RDS. It does help identify talent, but it's also an opportunity for players who are not in the Atlanta United Academy to get high-level instruction. and get the opportunity for this to play at the Benz. It was really cool to see the parents and see the kids having such a good time. I had a blast calling it. That's why my voice is a little raspy today, because I was getting into it. I was yelling a little bit. Thank you so much for hanging out with me tonight. AST's back next Tuesday, but don't forget Sunday night this weekend. Pre-game coverage starts at 6 o'clock. Abe Gordon and Madison Cruz will get you rolling. Mike Conti and I will take over for kickoff at 7:10, Atlanta United and FC Cincinnati. Something's got to break Atlanta United's way. Can they make that happen on Sunday? We'll all find out together, and we'll be back here on Tuesday to talk about it. Adios, everybody.
Baseball is back. The 2025 MLB season is upon us. So what's the easiest way to keep up with all the big stars, top scores, and fun storylines from the night before? What's the solution? Is there a secret?
Chocolate milk and squats. That's the secret.
Not quite, Pete, but there is the Morning Lineup Podcast, a quick, less than 10-minute morning highlight show from MLB. It airs Mondays through Fridays on Spotify, Apple, or wherever you get your podcasts. You bring the chocolate milk, we'll bring the baseball news.